Also everybody who woke up early to come to the talk. But the title is Children's Drawings for Some Written Curves, and hopefully by the end of the next hour it will be clear what that means. But this is based on some work done with Sujaya Shock and Freddy Cassato here at Perimeter. And so the main goal of the talk will be to try to convince you that there is some relation between two very different problems that arise, one in physics and one in mathematics. So I'll start by reviewing the two problems. So the physics problem is the classification of branches of n equals 1 vector. And in a moment I will say more precisely what is the context in which we would like to ask this question. And the math problem is probably much less familiar, is the classification of what Grothendieck called children's drawings into Galois orbits. And I will try to explain what these words mean later on. Okay, so this review part will take more than half of the talk, but then I hope to have all the elements to try to show why we think that there is a connection between these two problems and why such a connection might be a good thing. Okay. So I'll just start from the physics problem, and there will be lots of things to say about this topic, but I'll try to keep it just to the center. So I'll just review a few facts that are needed for what follows. And most of what I'm going to say is taken actually from this paper by Cassato and Lumita. Okay, so we take n equals 2 supergermanic theory, and actually, just for simplicity, for this talk, we will always consider the case of a pure Young-Mills theory, although all what I'm going to say can be generalized in an interesting way to the case with matter as well. So we'll just mention that at the end. And, okay. So, the modular space of Vaca in a theory of this kind can be described as the modular space of a hyperelliptic curve of this kind. And this is a Cyber-Wilken theory. And so here the notation, so the subscript always denote the degree of the polynomial from now on. So this is a polynomial of degree n, and it has this form. So it's a polynomial in Z that depends on the eigenvalues of this of the adjoint scalar in the vector multiple. Okay. And so, generically, the picture is something like this. So at the generic point in the modular space, we have a curve that will look something of this kind. And on the z-plane, what we see is just a configuration of zeros of this expression with some cuts drawn between them. And the A and B cycles here in the curve are just some contours either around the cuts or going between two of the cuts. Right, so that's for the n equals 2 case, but we are interested in breaking the theory to n equals 1, and so we add a superpotential of this kind with the various powers of trace for real. And so now, of all the Vaca we had before in the n equals 2 modular space, most of the Vaca will be lifted. So the only ones that survive are those that correspond to critical points of the superpotential. And to phrase this condition in Cyber-Wilken language, what we can do is ask that the Cyber-Wilken curve factorizes in the product of two polynomials like this. So here again, the subscript is the degree of the polynomial. And little n here depends on the degree of the superpotential. And it was shown by Cacciazzo, Intelligator, and Vaca that so the superpotential enters this condition in this way. So the derivative of superpotential determines one of the two factors in which this curve has to factorize.
So can you remind me why the normally corresponds to factorize?
Well, okay, so you're asking why this relation?
No, you're saying that you want to restrict yourself to...
Okay, well, one of the reasons, sorry, what I was going to say now, So the earlier we had the generic picture of the generic point in the moderate space of this curve. Now the points where we have n equals 1, what are those where the curve is non-generic and some cycles shrink to 0? So some of the zeros of this expression here have to collide. And the meaning of this is that the mass of some charged BPS particle is going to 0. And so this was discussed already in the original Sagrubitin paper, the fact that so this is consistent with this point being n equals 1 vector because of some extra massless particles are needed for the Higgs mechanism to work and to give the correct logic. So, okay, so this is the story. And so what we need to do to find the Higgs vector is to solve this kind of condition.
So in the original Sagrubitin paper, it was when they gave just the mass.
Right, so in that case.
So this is, I guess this is a generalization.
Right. So then they discuss the case in which they add the quadratic term here, and then the argument is that essentially you need the Higgs mechanism to give mass to the time. But the same kind of thing has to happen anyway, it's just a generalization.
Is there a relation between N and the charge of the monopole or diode and the condenser?
No, the number of monopoles with condenser is n. Actually, but it's related, depending on that. Okay, so what we want to study is the modular space of this n equals 1 vacuum. So we want to see what happens once we vary these parameters GL here in the superpotential. And here is a trace missing. So to see what the modular space looks like, we can count the number of degrees of freedom in the equation we have to solve. So we have a polynomial equation of this kind. And if you count the number of equations and the number of variables you have to solve for here, you see that this equation has n three parameters. So here I'm drawing what is a picture of the modular space, and we have to think of this as an n-dimensional variety that is made of various branches that can meet a certain point. Okay, and so because we have these three parameters, what we can also do is we can tune these parameters to obtain, to go to a different form of the polynomial equation that will have no more free parameters. So what it means is that we have already shrunk some cycles in the original Sagrubitin curve to come to satisfy this condition, and now we can use this n free parameter to shrink more cycles, as many cycles as we can using this degree of freedom. And so if we do this, we obtain some isolated point in this modular space where more particles become massless with respect to the points around. And now at this point, these isolated points in the modular space don't have any particular meaning other than what I just said. But I'm just pointing out the existence of this point because they will be very important later. Okay, so.
So those will be actual examples.
Yeah, and sometimes they will be, but in the case I'm considering, actually mostly they won't be.
Cases. Generalization.
Yeah. Okay. Depending how broad you want to consider
the
yes. Okay.
That's
it. Yes. Okay. So. The question that is addressed in this paper that I referred to by Cassato, Sandor, and Witten is since we have these different branches in the modular space of n equals 1 vacuum, how can we distinguish these different branches? And so they introduce some order parameters for this purpose. And the first order parameter they introduce is this confinement index. So this is defined as follows. Is denoted by t, and it's the smallest value of r for which w to the r does not exhibit an area law. And w here is the Wilson loop. So if t is 1, then the theory is not confining, and otherwise it's confining NT is in some sense a measure of confinement in the theory. And they could show that this was a good order parameter in the sense that points, you can't change the value of T without going to a singular point. So you have to change, you can't change the value of T within a certain, the same branch. Okay, and another definition of T that is useful in practice is this. So we can consider this operator, which is actually the generative function of fiber operators, and define this these two points. So we consider the periods of this around the cycles on the curve, and we denote by Ni the periods around the A cycles and Vi the periods around the B cycles. And these quantities have some physical meaning. So these Ni's are the ranks of the gauge groups to which the original UN group is broken classically, and these have the meaning of relative theta angles. So anyway, apart from this, so the statement is that T defined like this can also be computed as the greatest common divisor of these numbers here. So this is a way to compute in practice what is this confinement index. And well, okay, they could show that these two conditions are the same. Okay, so in the same paper, they could also show that the confinement index cannot be the only order parameter that is sufficient to classify all the branches, because they could come up with some scenario in which you would have different branches, but you can prove that the confinement index is always going to have the same value for all the branches. So you need some other order parameters. And so they introduced this new order parameter that they call holomorphic invariance. And so this is defined as follows. You consider the vacuum expectation value of fiber operators of this kind, and then the idea is that in different branches there will be different relations satisfied by these operators. So an example could be a relation of this kind. And you could have, for example, this relation satisfied on one branch and no relation at all on another branch. This would be enough to distinguish them. And again, so in practice, this can be just summarized in two integers, S plus and S minus, that distinguish different ways of solving the polynomial equation we had before. So this means the following. We had this polynomial equation to solve. And we can write it like this. We can, and just something very simple, we can write the left-hand side here as the product of two factors, just like this. And then there are different solutions to this equation depending on how we choose to distribute the roots of these two polynomials between these two factors. So we get different kinds of solutions that are parametrized by these two integers here. Okay, so this is... So we are going to take this as plus and this minus in addition to T before as ordered parameters to distinguish these branches. And so this is all that is discussed in the paper and actually is what is more or less known even now. But it's not clear that these are the only ordered parameters that one needs. Actually, it seems very likely that once you look at the more complicated examples, you will have necessity to introduce more ordered parameters. So this is one open question that is there in this kind of analysis. It is not known what is the complete list of ordered parameters.
Sorry, but with this holomorphic ordered parameters, it's enough to distinguish branches completely?
Or no. It is enough in the examples that have been studied, and so they were introduced precisely for that reason. But then maybe if you go to a more complicated example, just increasing the n for n, then there might be more branches that will have the same values of this, so you need more. Okay, so here I'm going to consider one example just explain a bit more clearly what I said so far. And actually, this is the example we will be referring to for the rest of the talk. So it's U6 n equals 2 to the potentials, that is broken to n equals 1 at the qubit superpotential. And so the reason why we take this example is because it was worked out in detail in the paper that I referred to before. And as I said, it's also the main example we consider. Okay, so in this case, that equation I had to solve to find n equals 1 vector takes this form. And so if you do the counting of parameters as I did before, you find that it has one tunable parameter. So, okay, this is again the picture of the modular space, but now it's just one complex dimensional variety. And then, as I said before, I can use this this parameter to go to a polynomial equation that is rigid. So, for example, what I can do here is I can, in general, here F4 is a polynomial of degree 4. It has, in general, four different roots, and H4 also has four different roots. And I can use the parameter to ask if two of the roots of F4 are the same, and I obtain a polynomial equation of this kind. And this selects just one point in the modular space, which happens to be this point here where the branches meet. So this is one example of what I called before a rigid disabilitant curve. And so there are other things I can do. I can ask that a root of F4 coincide with the root of H4, and I get an equation of this kind. And this gives me some other points, or I have the last case in which I can ask the two roots in H4 coincide, and I get something like this. So this determines some isolated points in the modular space. And the reason why I'm drawing attention to this repeatedly is data. Okay, so in this case, the analysis of the branches using the other parameters is very simple because, in fact, the first order parameter that I mentioned is already enough to distinguish the branches. They could show that so the confinement index has different values in each branch. It's 1, 2, and 3 in these three branches. So we wouldn't need any other order parameters. And in fact, in this example, these S pluses minus order parameters that I mentioned earlier are less refined in the sense that they can only distinguish this branch from these two. So they are less, they are worse in some sense. But there are many other examples in which the situation is reversed. So they are this way. Okay. All right, so this would conclude the view of the first part, so the physics problem. And so the whole point is we take an n equals 2 superdimensions theory, for the moment without matter for simplicity, and we break it to n equals 1 by adding a superpotential. Then we saw that the n equals 1 vacua are given by particular factorizations of the Seibel-Witten curve, and so this means solving a certain set of polynomial equations. And there are some free parameters that give a modular space of vacua, and the modular space of vacua is composed of different branches, which are distinguished by some other parameters. And as I said, the one big open question here is that we don't know if this is a complete list of other parameters, and actually probably it is not, and there might be need to find more other parameters.
Just an example, where you know that there's not enough other parameters?
Well, okay, so in for the case with the for the case without matter, I think that in fact only very few examples were worked out, and so there are no arguments that say that there should be more or the parameters the way that was. And for the confinement index, you can come up with general arguments that tell you that it's not enough. Now, including this S plus S minus, I don't know if you can come up with similar arguments, but the examples that have been studied are so few that it seems that it's very likely that there might be something else.
And the ones that have been studied.
Yeah, and the ones that have been studied is sufficient. But then in the case with matter, there are no other parameters known, so that it's clear that there is need to find something. Okay. Any other questions about this part? Alright, so what I will do is try to relate this question of finding if there are more order parameters and what they are to a question that it's apparently very unrelated, but that lies in mathematics, and it's what I'm going to discuss next. Okay, so now I'll try to tell you something about this descendant farm or children's drawings, which were introduced by Grothendieck. And okay, here the discussion will not be ultimately rigorous, but I just hope to be able to give you an idea of the essential facts. Alright, so to discuss this first, I should review briefly a few things about Galois groups, in case not everybody is familiar with them. And so one way to introduce Galois groups is very basic. So we consider any equation with rational coefficients, like this one, for example. And so in general, the roots are not rational. And the Galois group associated with this equation would be simply defined as the group of permutations of these roots, such that any equation with rational coefficients that these roots satisfy would still be satisfied after the permutation. So we got these roots from this equation, but there might be other equations that have these among their roots, and we want these equations to be still satisfied after we permute them. And so in the case of this example, the Galois group is the isomorphic to the Dahedral group before. It's a simple, small group. Okay, so this is maybe the most intuitive way to define the Galois group. But for what we need later, it's better to give also another definition that is based on the theory of number fields. And so it goes as follows. Okay, so given, this looks a bit more formal, but I'm going to show in a moment how it's equivalent to the one I had before. So given a field F, which for us will be just a field of rational numbers, so this is Q, we consider an extension of this field with some conditions that I'm not going to go into. And we consider all the maps, so that are automorphism of this extension, but that leave invariant the field F we started with. And so these automorphisms form the Galois group of this field extension. All right, so that's the definition. And so just to see in practice what it means, so we can consider again the equation we had before. And now the fact that this equation or any equation with the rational coefficient. So this means that the field that we are considering the F is Q. And then we consider the roots of this equation, and we extend the rational numbers to include these roots. So in some sense, it's like obtaining the complex number by adding the square root of minus 1 to the real numbers. In this case, we are obtaining a new field by adding these roots, and in fact, all we need to add is really the square root of minus 1 and the fourth root of 2. And then we obtain this new number field. And now so we can consider the Galois group of this new number field, and you can see that the only way to have automorphism of this field extension without changing the rational numbers is just by permuting these roots. And so the definition here is, in this case, is really equivalent to the definition we gave before. And again, so the Galois group defined going through this field extension thing is again before. Okay, so is this reasonably clear? Good. Okay, so these are all these groups you obtain like this, starting from polynomial equations, are all some finite groups, and they can be quite simple, like in this case. But what we are interested in here is something that is more complicated, and is what is called the absolute Galois group of the Q bar over Q. So here, we are applying the definition I gave before to the whole set of algebraic numbers. So instead of focusing on the roots of a specific equation, this is the set of all the roots of all possible equations with rational coefficients. So the algebraic numbers. And so this particular definition before. We have to look at all the automorphisms of the algebraic numbers that live in variant interactions. And this is a very big group, and it's not, I mean, it has been studied a lot in mathematics, but it's still very mysterious, and in fact, very little is known, especially about the representation theory of this this group.
Is it finite or infinite?
It's infinite. And okay, so here is where these children's drawings come in, because so Grothendieck introduced this. These children's drawings that are some graphs and Riemann spheres and we'll describe next as a set on which the Galois group acts faithfully. So it's a good set on which you could try to study some representation theory of the group. And you can try to so the idea is to try to translate in terms of just combinatorial quantities that have to do with these graphs all the information about the action of the Galois group and these graphs. So it's supposed to be a way to try to simplify the problem in some sense by attaching something more concrete, like a graph, to it. And so I'm going to say now what these children's drawings are. Okay, so the sample children's drawing is a graph on a Riemann surface that has a Weber-type structure. So that simply means that I have all the nodes in the graph, and I draw some of them full and some of them empty, for example, alternating along the graph like this. And in fact, for simplicity, we will consider in this talk a much smaller subset of this. So it will be only graphs on the sphere. We will only look at trees, so graphs with no loops. And finally, we will consider graphs in which the empty nodes always have valency 2, so they have only two links coming out of them. It is possible to restrict to this subset of graphs, and the Galois group still acts faithfully on them, so one can ask all the same questions that we could ask together. So if we restrict to these graphs, then we can denote we can call the full nodes vertices, because these are those that can have any valency. And these we denote them by edges, because essentially they mark the links between adjacent full nodes. Okay. So giving the graph is not enough to specify the drawing. We also need to give a map to specify completely the drawing. So this. We have to have drawing to be the inverse image of a segment under a map satisfying certain properties. And so the map has to be a map of this kind that has that satisfies the property of having exactly three critical values. Anyway, this is not very important now, but it's a map that satisfies a certain property. And in fact, since I said we only consider graphs in the sphere, we really need a map that just maps the complex sphere to itself, so we can just work on the complex plane very simply. Okay, so summarizing, a descent is a graph like this that is obtained as the inverse image of the 0, 1 segment on the complex plane under a map of this kind. And actually, for the kind of drawings we're going to look at, this is always going to be just a polynomial. So it's actually much less complicated than you might see from here. And just to explain a bit better what this statement means, so we have this drawing here and the map beta. And so the fact that the drawing is the inverse image of the 0, 1 segment means that so we have all the full nodes that are mapped to just one point here to 0. All the empty nodes will be just mapped to 1, and then every link is mapped to the 0, 1 interval. Okay. Right, so I'm almost done with the definitions. And so the reason why the Galois group acts on this is that so these maps, they will in general have coefficients that are algebraic numbers. So for us, it will always be some polynomial with the algebraic numbers as coefficients. And so we saw that the Galois group acts non-trivially on these algebraic numbers. And so it will transform a belly map into a different belly map, and so consequently a drawing to another drawing. And so the whole goal of this is to try to understand, so once we have translated this action from action on maps into action on graphs, to try to understand something about the action of the group, just considering some combinatorial data associated to these graphs. All right. Any questions? Okay. So the goal of the program is to try to classify these drawings in orbits under the action of the Galois group. So what that means is, so we've given any two of these graphs, we want to be able to tell just by computing some simple combinatorial quantity in these graphs if they are part of the same orbit or not. So being part of the same orbit means that there has to be some element of the Galois group that acts on one of them to give me the other one. And so an example of this question would be this. So I could give you these four drawings. And I could ask you to tell me if they are all in the same orbit or not. And in this case, the answer turns out to be that these three drawings here are in the same orbit, so there is some element of the Galois group that acting on this drawing gives me this and then this. But this one cannot be obtained from these drawings. And it doesn't have to be obvious just by looking at them, but the whole point is to try to make it obvious, to find some quantities you can computer just looking at these graphs that will tell you that they're in different orbits. And so these quantities that we can compute are the Galois invariants. So some we want to find a set of Galois invariants such that if we compute all the Galois invariants on two drawings and even just one of these Galois invariants differs, then we know for sure that they're in different orbits. And so the point is that a full set of these invariants is not known. So there are some invariants that are known, and if you find the two drawings have a different value of the invariant, then you know that they're in different orbits. But if they have the same value, then you don't know. There might be another invariant that will distinguish them. And now, so that we don't completely lose sight of the goal. So I mentioned here a problem in physics in which the problem was to find the order parameters to distinguish branches of vacuum. And the idea, so what we want to suggest is that this is not unrelated to the problem of finding invariants to distinguish orbits of drawings. So we want to kind of show that there is a relation between the problem of finding Galois invariants and finding order parameters in physics. So
how are those last two in the set of three, how are those different?
Oh, it's because that's what that's. So it's because given the graph, as I said, is not enough to determine the. So as graphs, this would be the same, but they correspond to different maps. So in fact, even in principle, okay, this is a detail I didn't mention, but if I just rotate this graph on the plane, it will also correspond to a different map. We kind of moved out by these simple rotations and shifts on the plane. But this reflection is still not the same. So now I'm going to give a list of the most basic Galois invariants, just so you get an idea of what they are, and also because then I want to try to relate them to the order parameters I discussed before. And we just mentioned that the simplest invariants, so there are more that are not. Okay, so the first invariant is the balancing list. So we give a list like this in which we say how many vertices we have that have balancing 1, how many with balancing 2, how many with balancing 3, and so on. So for example, if I take this graph here, I have 3 vertices with balancing 1, 3 with balancing 2, this 3 here, and just 1 with balancing 3. Okay, and so this is a good Galois invariant in the sense that if two graphs have different balancing lists, they cannot be in the same orbit. But so I just told you that these two graphs are in different orbits, but they just happen to have the same balancing list. So this invariant is not enough to distinguish these two orbits. And so we already not see that we need more invariants. And so there is another very simple invariant we can consider if we only look at the trees, which is what we do here. And it's a refined version of the valency list. So we start from the same drawing we had before. And we erase all the empty nodes, which are boring anyway, because they always have valency 2 when they are boring. So we get a new smaller drawing. And now we associate a new bipartite structure by marking the vertices with the minus or plus signs alternating along the graph like this. And so now we can introduce some new valency lists separately from the for the vertices with sign plus and sign minus. So for example, here we have two vertices marked by a plus that have valency 1, and the 2 that have valency 2, and 0 with valency 3, and so on, also with the first mannequin. In the example we had before, so these two had the same valency list, but now the refined valency lists are different. So already we can tell just from this that they are into different orbits. Okay, this just to give you an idea of the fact that the problem, which seems very complicated, can be reduced to something that is much, much simpler, like computing these valency lists, for example. Okay, and I'm going to mention just one more invariant, slightly more complicated, which is kind of the next simplest invariant. So this is the monogamy group. I don't want to go exactly into the details, but this is a discrete group that you can associate to each drawing. And again, if the compute the group, which you can do using some mathematical software, and if the groups are different, then you know that they are in different orbits to draw. So I'll just give you an example. So the group is generated by two generators like this, and so what you have to do is you have to label the links in the graphs like this. And then this is the permutations of edges around the plus vertices. So in this case, it's just a cyclic permutation of these three edges, because it is here there is always only just one edge, so these are just identical. And sigma minus are the cyclic permutations of edges around the minus vertices. So they all have valency 2 here, so they're all just length 2 cycles. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, 6, like this. Okay, so here the details are not important, but I just wanted to give an idea of what the more complicated invariants might look like. So the hope is to have always some invariants that only depend on the characteristics of the graph and never on the details of the valley map. So we want to kind of remove all the complication that is in the maps from the problem and just keep the combinatorial data. And so in this case, the group ends up being quite simple, but as you increase the number of edges, as you can imagine, it can become complicated, but you can still kind of handle it more. And there are many more invariants, but I'm not going to.
And this, what you find invariants, they are invariants on the valley, this map from this field.
Well, okay, so they.
It can be proven that they are.
It can be proven that if two drawings are in different orbits, so if they correspond to valley maps that cannot be related by the action of the Galois group, then they. Well, okay, but not. All right. That if they are different, then the drawings correspond to belly maps that cannot be related by the action of the Galois group. But they can be. It can happen that they are the same as the third one. Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So this concludes the review of the math part. Essentially, so what we have seen is that. So we are looking at this very complicated object, which is the absolute.
Just a question, if it acts, so you're just looking at tree tree diagrams, but mm-hmm. that's faithfully, what's the use of looking at like more complicated graphs?
In fact, so mathematicians don't look at more complicated graphs. They look exactly at the set of graphs that I have defined with the empty nodes having only valence 2 and just a set of 3s because it's a smaller set. So Grothendieck at the beginning didn't know that, I guess, so he proposed a bigger set, and then mathematicians use this smaller set. But in fact, the other ones are also important for us because the correspondence that I'm going to try to suggest now. So if we restrict to young Mills theories without matter, like I'm doing here, then it's okay to look only at these graphs. If I want to have theories with matter, for example, I will need the graphs with loop for the correspondence to work. And so the other graphs are also important for this correspondence, if the correspondence makes sense. Okay, so we saw that introduced this children's drawings as a good tool to study this complicated mathematical object. And so we saw a drawing is a bipartite graph with an associated map that has to satisfy a certain condition. And I haven't given any examples of Bailey maps yet because I didn't want to complicate too much the story, but an example is going to come up soon, so you can see what they look like. And so the goal of this program is to find a complete list of Galois invariants to be able to classify completely the descent in orbit under the action of the Galois group. And I have given some examples of invariants, and there are more known, but nevertheless, a full list is not known, and this it's known for sure because there are examples of drawings that are known to be in different orbits and they can't be distinguished yet by anything. Okay. All right, so finally we come to our work. And so, as I said before, the idea is that we think there is a relation between these two problems. So the classification of branches of many plus one vacua as in the setup that I gave before, and the classification of drawings into Galois orbits. Right. Okay. So the first thing that I want to show is how you can associate to any regions of a Witten curve a Bailey map and therefore a drawing. So these regions have written curves are those that correspond to those isolated points in the modular space that I had before. So what I want to say is that for each of those isolated points, find by tuning all the three parameters, there will be a natural way to associate the drawing. And so it goes like this. So let's consider again the example we had before, the U6 example. And so just the n equals 2 theory with this Ridge group will have this algorithm curve. Then, so if you just consider this, we saw that you can, so just for a generic point in the modular space, you have something like this on the Z plane. So now the picture looks a bit different from what I had before, but so again, this full dot here are the zeros of this expression. And so before, so there are cuts between them. But now I'm also drawing the zeros of P and then marking them by these empty dots. And these links here are supposed to be the cuts that we had in the pictures at the beginning. And so the cuts do go between the zeros of Y squared. They don't have to go between through the zeros of P, but just for our purposes, we'll draw them through them. We can draw them through them, so we'll do it. Okay, so this the notation, of course, with this empty and full dots is because I'm hoping to show as we go along how a descent will fall. This is not yet a descent because the descent, first of all, has to be a connected graph, so this cannot be yet a descent. But I want to show that as we go through all the steps to reach this region of the Witten curve, then a descent will form. Okay, so the first step was to break to n equals 1, and here again we did with a cubic superpotential. And so the condition to solve now is this polynomial equation. And so this gives us some non-generic cyber-Witten curve with some cycles from to zero. And what this meant was, so before, that some of the zeros of this expression here now we'll collide in a way like this. And we still have a free parameter here, and we can interpret this free parameter as the relative distance between these two graphs on the plane. Okay, so then the last step is to pick one of the three ways that I mentioned before in which I can make this this curve rigid. So I pick this one, and I have to use this free parameter to reach this configuration here. And so what happens here is that essentially I'm making these two graphs collide to obtain something of this kind. Okay, is it clear? Right, so this, okay, the way I'm drawing it looks like one of these children's drawings. And then, of course, I have to show also that there is a belly map associated with it. But before I do that, I just wanted to show something slightly more precise. So this is the actual mathematical graph. Then, so you take this rigid polynomial equation, you solve it, and you plot the roots of all these polynomials, like here. Yeah. And you obtain something that looks like what I had before. And if you do this with any of these rigid equations that you come up with in these problems, you always find the configuration of zeros that in which the full and the empty dots alternate, and that suggests already how to draw the graph.
Sorry, can you make a statement like a rigid Cyber-Quicken curve without math will always be a tree graph?
Yes. I haven't said that yet, but it's clear from what I'm, well, maybe not clear, but it comes from what I'm going to say now. So as I said, to say that there is a children drawing, I need to give a belly map. The graph is not enough. So the belly map here is this. Okay, something that is proportional to the left-hand side of the Cyber-Quicken curve equation. And this can be shown to be a belly map if this polynomial here satisfies the rigid factorization equation. So one can show that it satisfies all the conditions. And so this is why I said that the belly maps for us will be always polynomials, because they are constructed like this always, and so they will be always polynomials. If you have the case, if you consider the case with matter, it will be a bit more complicated, and you'll have a denominator as well. And so in the belly maps that are polynomials always give trees, and then as you add some poles, that is the number of loops that you add. So, so we only have trees because it's a polynomial.
Is there something special will happen when you have exactly, if, so I look at the fundamental factor multiplex, and the number, when I am at the conformal?
The adding matter, you
mean? Right. The number of flavors n.
Right.
And c equals 2 n.
But we didn't.
So that's sort of a special case when instead of lambda to the 12, you have, I guess, that for massless matter.
Right. So we only looked at a few examples with matter, so we didn't study that extensively at this point. So I don't. It's a good question, but I don't know what happens there. Right. Now we started by looking at things with matter, but then we kind of restricted to these examples because this is what is now in the mathematical literature. So to work out all the dictionary, it seems like the best place to actually start. And also in physics is more known, but right. Okay, anyway, so just continuing. Okay, so we shall give this example how it works, and the statement we'll have to make here is that so for every rigid Cyber-Quicken curve, in any example you can think of without matter, you will actually with matter as well for the maps, there will always be an actual way to construct a belly map, and so you can always associate one of these drawings to those curves. And actually this is it's a bit more than just a conjecture, I think we kind of understand that this is true.
So you mean that to every rigid curve you can find a Betty Maps, that's about, but if I give you a Betty Maps, it doesn't mean that there is a rigid cyber within character associated to it. Is that really a one-to-one correspondence, or is that just...
Okay, let's see. Okay, for polynomials, I think it's certainly true. I mean, it's a kind of obviously true.
For any Betty Maps, or just for the polynomials?
As for polynomials, I think I'm sure it's true. But I think it's true. At least as far as we understand it, it's true always. That's what we would like to say, that there is a one-to-one correspondence. Yeah, I think the only thing we
can do. Can you show that, or is that just your
expected? Well, no, essentially you can kind of show it. Yeah, it's just you have to go a bit more to the details on how Belly map is constructed even in math of first place. But I think what we want to say is that essentially if you consider, okay, so if you consider something, here we had degree six example, so P has degree six, so this means we get graphs with six edges. So what we would like to say is that if I start with something like this, I will get all possible drawings with six edges that exist. So as I increase, I should get all of them. That's the idea. The only thing we didn't do, so we considered always maps only from the sphere to the sphere. So we never considered that higher genus surfaces, and actually there we have no idea what to have this year. But at least for maps on P1 to P1, I think it's true. More questions? Okay, so this is the first step in establishing this dictionary. And so the fact that you can get a drawing at each of these points. And so here, just for completeness, in the example we studied before, we had all these rigid factorizations coming. So these isolated points in the moduli space coming from these three possible rigid factorizations you can obtain. And here I'm drawing the sum that corresponds to each of these points. And one way to do this is just by solving these equations exactly, and then plotting the roots of the polynomials with Mathematica, and these things come up in the plot. Okay. Right, so what I want to say now is that there is somehow a relation between distinguishing orbits of these drawings and the phase, the branch in which these points sit. All right, so now we try to go kind of quickly enough through what we know about the dictionary between the two problems at the moment. And so the idea is to try to map, try to see what the order parameters mean on the math side and what the line variance mean on the physics side. So once we have established that at least the two basic objects at the curve and the drawings have a correspondence. So the first Tolois invariant that I mentioned was the valency list. And this is mapped exactly into the form of the rigid factorization in this sense. So this was one of the rigid polynomial equations I had. And from the right-hand side here, you can read off the valency list of the drawings that you can get by solving this equation. So here, the degree of the polynomial says the number of vertices, and the power here, the valency of the vertices. So we have three vertices with valency 1, three with valency 2, and one with valency 3, which is this valency list here. And so by solving this equation, you get, so there are in fact four solutions to this equation, and they correspond to these four drawings, that they all have this valency list. Okay. This is the simplest correspondence. Then, so we had the fine valency list, and this is a bit straightforward, but it's so this maps to the holomorphic invariants that I mentioned before. In the sense that if I give you the two lists, V plus and V minus, for drawing, this is enough information to reconstruct the value of S plus, S and S minus on this side. And now, okay, this is maybe one of the most interesting things that we found. So the confinement index was the first order parameter introduced in physics, and so we couldn't find anything that it would map into on this side, but then we could actually prove that this is a Galois invariant. And so unfortunately, we don't know if it's a new Galois invariant or if it is maybe equivalent to one of those that are known. And we have tried to ask some mathematicians, but we haven't been able to communicate much yet. But the point is that just from the fact that this was an order parameter here, we could conjecture that this would be a Galois invariant, and in fact, we could prove that it was. And we could give a description of this in terms of combinatorial data. So you can compute the confinement index in this way, essentially. Given a drawing like this, you mark all the vertices that have odd valency. In this case, only the external ones. Here, this three and the central one. And then you kind of count the edges between any two of these points. The procedure is actually slightly more complicated, but the way I said it works for actually most of the cases we did. And then you take the greatest common divisors of these numbers, and this is the confinement index. Actually, it comes directly from the second definition I gave with the confinement index, where I said that it was the greatest common divisor of the periods of the generating function t. And what you can show is that the integral of t between two nodes is always one, and so if you want to count the period, all you have to do is really count the number of edges you have here. And so if you compute the confinement index with this rule, you see that if this drawing is sitting in a branch of confinement index 1, you find correctly that it has confinement index 1. Again, so this is a Galois invariant that has maybe some chance of being a new invariant, but in any case, it's a nice result.
So how could you prove that it's a Galois invariant? Is that easy or the?
No, it's okay. It's not, it's not difficult, but it's, okay, so it uses the fact that, actually, so this is something that I had here in the list that I didn't want to mention much, but so on this side we have a multiplication map that is a way to having solutions with confinement index t to find the solutions so that we have a confinement index multiple of t. And there is something similar here on the other side that is called the extending map. And essentially what we showed first is that the multiplication map is a simple example of a Bell extending map. And then we kind of try to mimic other proofs that can use the fact that the Bell extending map, once applied to a drawing, doesn't change the fact that two drawings belong to the same orbit or not. And so you can show that, using this, we could show that. Okay, so in fact, this is another element in the dictionary that I didn't want to discuss much because it was a bit out of what I already said, but it's another thing that maps nicely. And so then there is the Galois invariant that I mentioned, instead the monodomy group, so we didn't find anything that that maps into here also because so if the correspondence is correct, then we would expect to have something that it maps into, but there are only two known the parameters here and they have already taken, so this would either suggest that we could find a new order parameters or maybe that it's wrong the first one. Okay. Alright, so actually to my last, the conclusion. I just want to summarize in this last slide what we think is the situation with this correspondence. So I showed you what is the evidence we have for this relation. So it's not enough to make any precise statements, so we have only some conjectures. And the first, the strongest conjecture that one would like to make is that for every Galois invariant there is a physical order parameter, and that would be nice because then for the monodomy group that I just mentioned and other Galois invariants would be for the parameter, and that would be really nice because it would be useful for physics. And in particular, for theories with methods, for method, as I said, there are no known order parameters at this point. So in this case, it would be especially useful. And in fact, not much is known here because this somehow hasn't been investigated much. So maybe even without a firm belief in the truth of this conjecture, it would be still nice to use this as a kind of a guiding principle to try to analyze this case a bit more.
Sorry. How many variants are known?
Well, so there is one more that I know that I didn't mention that is combinatorial. Then there are some invariants that mathematicians don't seem to like very much because they need the information from the maps. They are not just combinatorial, so those we haven't really looked at. They are not really mentioned much. And then through this belly extending map that were there in the previous slide, it's actually possible in principle to construct infinite new invariants starting from the previous one, because it's a map that kind of from invariant gives you new invariants. But then in practice, this has been done only for a couple of examples of maps, so it's not clear what are the invariants. So most of this will be just a repetition of the old ones.
But doesn't mean that only computer science has more function marks?
Well, yeah, I suppose that would mean that we need that, yes. And, right. Okay, so again, for this case with method, for example, we in the few cases we looked at, okay, so first of all, there is a question. So the order parameters that are used in the case without method are not good order parameters in the case with method anymore. On the other hand, in the on the other side, in the Galois theory, there this is not really a problem. I mean, just applying these invariants to trees or to graphs with loop is essentially the same. So maybe those other parameters could still have some meaning even in this theory. Just should be understood better. In any case, so this should be investigated more. And okay, so this was a strong form of the conjecture. Then this is a weaker form that is essentially the vice versa of this, and this is what we think has a more chance of being true with what we know so far. And this is maybe more useful in getting information from physics to math, because essentially it seems to be true that if two points where the sun appear are in different branches, then they will be in different Galois orbits. And so, for example, we saw with the confinement index that if two drawings have the different confinement index, then they have to be in two different Galois orbits, so we could prove that. So can we sort of think that this statement has more chances of being true? But anyway, so I can conclude with any that real statement, just lots of open questions, and I'll stop with this.
I'm asking what's the simplest one, because I think I have a suggestion what this permutation group could be.
Oh.
So in principle, the easiest one would be to check as small as n possible. Mm-hmm. But it could be that, so you can go away from the children drawing, right? I mean, from this region
right.
Point. And just give some parameters where you actually see the your raw data, okay? So sort of do a one parameter family that, and then just see how this element, once you do this, you're going back to the same drawing, and then you can see how that's realized in the BPS spectrum.
Right.
So then you have a map between the permutation group into SP2 and V, and just see how it works algebraically.
Right, so in fact, this is kind of what we are trying right now, in terms of, because one thing that actually we think it's nice from all these observations is that there is a fundamental difference in how the problems are approached in physics and math. So in math, they only concentrate on these rigid polynomial equations. Whereas in physics, you naturally get the first equations that depend on some parameters, and then you tune them to reach this point. And so it seems that somehow, even already this part could be maybe useful to use for the math side. And they don't seem to actually do this. And so, yes, in particular, we try to see what happens as you go from one point to the next in terms of monogamies, but we haven't seen anything definite yet.
For the case of my review, can you at least like show that there's a one-to-one correspondence with some with Bailey maps or Riemann surfaces in general?
Right, so still only looking at the P1 case for drawings, we think that all the drawings with loops on P1 can be obtained from these theories with matter.
But you're just looking at P1, you haven't looked at
No, because so that I'm not sure what that would be. It wouldn't be a case with just one gate group, probably. It might be some example with more than one gate group or something like that. Because we think all the example with one gate group with any matter content will be with the set of all the drops on P1. So then, it's not clear what will be the higher genus case.
More questions? Oh, let's thank you another again. This is a very short question break.